Canada. I'm a coming. And I think I'm going to record my CD there. November 13th through 17th, I will be at the Comic Strip in Edmonton, one of my favorite clubs to play. The last week of November, I'm back at the La Jolla Comedy Store. Very excited. We are live. It's The Naughty Show, Playboy Radio. I wish we had the Jeffersons music.
Moving on up.
And when the bunny calls,
yeah,
you answer.
You don't run from the bunny.
This is The Naughty Show. Here's Sam, Gareth, and Vicky.
10 o'clock sharp in the motherfucking peas. Illuminati, are you with me?
Hello, Illuminati.
Are you with the movement? This is hour two of the Sam Tripoli-less Naughty Show.
Yes, the Sunday release, if you're listening on iTunes or naughtyshow.net.
What's good is these are getting a little bit easier, because I think about the first time when Sam wasn't here, and you were here, but I did it, and I was really very, it felt really weird.
The
it
time
felt
at
like,
the joint?
Yeah, because you know there's that scene in Wayne's World where like Wayne's not there, and
yes.
Garth's just like looking at the camera, just like,
don't know what to.
Well, what happened that day was, that was at the joint, and we were outside smoking a cigarette before the show, as we tend to do.
That happens.
And Gino started busting out this insane story. And it was getting crazier and crazier and crazier.
It was just like any question you'd ask him, he'd just be like, well, where'd you meet her? And he'd be like, a genie. And
oh, right.
Like, what? Every detail that you asked
the follow-up. Was it about him living in a mansion?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I live in a mansion, and here's all the people that live in it. And we're like, what? And every single fucking little aspect of the story got more and more nuts. And you just started going, please save it. Save it.
Yeah.
Save it. And then we tried to recreate it.
That's the worst.
And it didn't work at all.
That is the worst. That's what always happens when... It's like that situation when you're telling someone, like, when you're trying to tell a joke and, like, nobody's listening. And then all of a sudden, like, you try it again and nobody listened. And then somebody's like, what were you going to say? And you're like, no, I don't want to say it right now. Like, it's not the time of that. It was good, like, two times ago. But it's... And they're like, say it. You're like, no, I really... They're like, say it. You're like, I just said it was going to be like Snoopy on Thanksgiving. And then everyone's like, what? And you're like, I said, fuck you. I didn't want to do it. Why did you make me do it? Jerk.
Like, the whole story changed once we started talking to him. Like, so tell us about your mansion. Like, I live in an apartment. I live in a studio apartment. Like, what about all the crazy characters?
Yeah. And that's all he has. Good to see Red Band, Messy Martinez.
Oh, that was so great.
Who do you like better?
Oh, definitely Missy.
Yeah.
Fuck Brian. I'm kidding.
I like them both.
I love them both.
It's fucked up for you to say.
I love them both.
And then I think Sarah's in love with Missy, by the way. Sarah Dresses, who works on the show.
Yeah, I think so. Well, it's so easy because Missy's fucking cool as shit.
Like, she's very cool.
I can't stress that enough. Like, I think her and Andy Sandemus, like, when we were doing that double
dare. I thought
you were
going to say Andy Samberg.
Right.
Which would have been a curveball.
That would have been a weird thing. When we were doing that double dare, in my head, I was thinking, like, if Missy and Andy Sandemus were here, they would be nailing these trivia questions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sapphire. All the power now. Power to control the show. Look at you. Unbelievable. Well, it was good. It was, and you just paid off your car?
I paid my car off today.
And what does that mean?
That means...
For those of us who were born with a silver spoon in our mouth.
That means 6 years later... For a Hyundai, by the way, most people would get a five-year loan. Not me. Not Vicky. 6 years with my father co-signing in New Jersey and a husband making all the money.
Sure.
So there's really no pride in this
payoff. Yeah, so I don't
think
this is a big deal. This should be a depressing
thing
for
all.
You.
This is
seems sadder.
It's like I so called in a payment.
So now you own a car.
So now I own a car.
And you've never owned a car?
Days. I owned... This is my third car. Mm-hmm. The first car I owned was a... 95 Neon in 99, which was already a piece of shit. 4 years later, it was already a piece of shit car.
Those are the cars that would say
gross.
Exactly.
Hi or yo.
Yeah, it would say hi, and trust that sales pitch really works on someone like me. Like, look how cute it is, but it's little
saying hi.
It has little like circular headlights. So that was a used one that broke in like 2 years. That piece of garbage. So after that, I was like nothing but new cars. Then I got my Saturn, my favorite ever, which got totaled right before I moved to LA.
Oh, that's
another.
A shame.
We're
well,
just full of happy stories.
At least your cats live. Unlike that other guy's fucking cats died.
To be fair, I should have said, whatever you do, don't randomly bring up the cats.
The cats. That was right away what I thought. I was like, man. It sounds like we got a happy ending headed towards the cats. And what happened to your cats? Sadly, the stress of the hurricane and the fire killed them all. And I love cats. It is crazy to think that there's so much stress from that shit that even a thing that only wants to shit in sand and sleep in the light on a pillow is like, I can't handle this shit.
It makes
I just think it's crazy
that these cats without Rock and Roll Mark around for a few months got so stressed out, like they needed daddy. They needed him. They needed him in his crazy ways in his smoke-filled little apartment. They needed that guy. And they made it. They made it through everything.
Brian Redman told me this theory once about how, and this is not right, but basically the idea was that cats control the past from the future with their shit. Have you heard that? No. I thought Dragonfly was giving me the okay. But I don't believe it either. I'm just saying that's pretty interesting that that's actually out there. And I completely
remember that being said. That's what's really
weird. I would love to know. Well, is there any other business to get through, Vicky? What else is there to talk about?
Well,
do you have anything
right now?
Is there anything you want to tell the Illuminati before we bring in our next guest?
There is some big news. We have ordered the postcards. The postcards we've been promising if you write the iTunes reviews.
So what happens is if someone writes an iTunes review...
Gives it 5 stars.
5 stars. If you give it 5 stars. We're slowly becoming Uber. if you give it 5 stars, you get a postcard... That's from us.
Right.
That says you did it.
Right. And it's, well,
yoo-hoo,
it's,
baby!
And that'll be you.
It's basically next year's promotional material a little early.
All right.
So we're going to give, basically, if you give us 5 stars, we're going to send you an ad for the show.
That's good.
But we'll sign it.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So, people seem to, I'm always surprised when people, it always, when we went to Toronto, it surprised the hell out of me how many people were glad to meet us.
Me
that's
too.
It's always just really weird when you're like, really? But I'm just
going,
one guy was like that over Winslow. I don't know if you remember that. The Winslow track is also sort of running a little bit dry now. is there anything else you want to say? Anything else we got for the Illuminati besides we're sorry about Laughster and we're going to make it up to you with a special roast of Santa Claus where maybe we'll be showing buttholes. Probably would be my guess. Hopefully no guys.
Hopefully not.
Playing bands.
Especially maybe it would be really great if no one showed their asshole.
Yeah,
on
if
the
nobody
roast.
Did. Yeah. There he is. All right, well, we should bring in our guest. So this guest is a very good friend of mine. He is a guy who actually, before I even met him, I thought he was the cat's tits because there was this video called What's It Gonna Be? And it's basically... him, it's just a fucking terrific song. Very viral video. Actually, we were out last night watching the Green Bay Packers lose in a game where Aaron Rodgers broke his collarbone, which was very hard for me to see. And he immediately got recognized for this video, among many other things. He's a great storyteller. He's an amazing writer. He's an amazing musician. He's an amazing stand-up. And he does all of these things. Mike O'Connell.
Mike O'Connell. How are you? Thank you for having me. It's
the people
a
love
joy
you.
To be here.
Thank you very much for coming, good sir. Mike O'Connell from the mean streets of Chicago originally.
Yes.
And Mike, you moved to Los Angeles from New Orleans?
I moved back to Chicago, then out here.
And then out here.
I went to college in New Orleans, just did some time there.
And is that where you started doing stand-up comedy, Mike?
That is. It's a drunken town, and it's a terrible place to start.
What
a very
really?
Terrible place to start.
Why is
actually,
that?
No, it's the best place to start because you fail often and hard.
Did you fail? I mean, obviously everybody fails when they start, but did you? I could, because your act is so great and so different that I think sometimes...
What a gentle way to put it.
Sometimes there are people... who I think are a little like, wow, this guy's out of his mind, but it's amazing. But I would imagine starting out when you add like nervousness into the mix of something like that, like you are maybe set for fucking failure.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But everybody in New Orleans is so weird already.
Yeah, right?
So, like,
yeah.
They're like, why is this guy trying to show off?
Yeah. I'm talking to dead babies that aren't there, motherfucker. Yeah, you
like,
ain't crazy.
Dog ain't got shit on me. Yeah, nobody, everybody's so mentally ill in their own way that, like, I just was a little more extreme.
And then you would just go to show, and would you start with songs, or would you, because you do a lot of songs,
I
you
would
do a lot
actually,
of poetry.
Actually, I'm embarrassed to say that at that point I hadn't written any of my own songs, so I would just do heavy metal versions of My Name is Luca.
Really?
Really?
It's so fucking embarrassing! Ah, but man, did it slay!
I remember the first time I tried to do stand-up, in college, I think I was under 21, and I wrote a bit about the Family Feud, and it was like heavily written. Thank you for that yawn. That shows that the story.
It is quite boring, not only out there, but in here.
I'm glad it translates. Yeah. But I wrote like 4 pages on the Family Feud, and I memorized it. And I was like, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do this great stuff on the Family Feud. And probably like 5 sentences in, I completely lost track of where I was going.
Oh, no.
And probably skipped pages of it and then just did little parts of it and just bombed so, so hard. Yes, like that.
That was. I bet your bomb was even sadder than that horn.
Honestly, yeah, that horn makes it sound
no,
like
that
somebody
was. I kind of laugh when I hear that horn.
Yeah, that was.
Don't
that
laugh night. At your bits, dog. Yeah.
So one of the things you do, Mike, among many things, is you run a show called Drunken Tales of Glory and Shame.
Yes,
which is a show in Los Angeles where you get comedians or funny people or.
Just
drunk
terrible
people,
drunk people.
Terrible yeah. drunk people to go up and tell these stories at this bar called Monty Bar. And it's fucking... The show itself is hilarious. And I've done it a few times. And eventually I'm like, man, I'm kind of running out of stories that at least I remember
right.
what happened. Because part of the thing is you get so fucked up. Like my new Facebook profile picture is me with a guy's glasses.
Oh, and I almost forgot.
And I think maybe we're out of hand with them, right?
Yeah.
Like Mike, on the other hand, he has a lot of great stories and does his own show every couple weeks and has just an amazing way of telling stories from embarrassing situations when one is intoxicated. Would you not say you have a little bit of a gift for that? Do you even feel that? Or do you think like...
Oh, no, I think that... Yeah, I think it's all about how you frame a situation that occurred to you. Really.
Yeah.
It's not about... the moment is never as glorious as the retelling.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I
so
guess
you always
is...
have to, you know, like... just waking up, you could be poetic about that
yeah.
if you wanted to.
Yeah.
It sounds boring, but... I mean, you know what I mean. You could basically make anything... more awesome by being flowery with your verbiage.
And you have a very, I think you're very adept at doing that. And I've heard you tell a lot of great stories. Last night when I was there, I told the story about when I wore a baby outfit for Halloween and I dressed up like a baby and I regretted my decision. But
the ATM card in the diaper.
Yeah, I had to wait in line at the ATM alone in the diaper and everyone was just like, "You're a baby." And I was like, "Oh God."
I am a baby.
Kill me. But I thought we would have you read one of your many stories.
Oh, sure, yes.
And you've brought one in, and so I will now hand this over to you.
Okay.
Good sir.
This is a story, and I think this is the first time it's been recorded, so it's the first time, possibly, that my father will hear this story. And that is motherfucking terrifying. But here we go, nonetheless. The Virgin Sale. It is entitled A Brief Affair. I ask you to engage the powers of your mind to imagine that it is the year 1998. I had just graduated from college and had moved back to Chicago to begin my attempt at becoming a stand-up comedian. Like a good struggling performer, I was moneyless and lived in an extra room in my father's basement apartment in Evanston, Illinois. Now, it is very important for you to understand that at this time, I still proudly embraced the profound delusion that being a stand-up comedian would garner me boatloads of tang. That the stand-up comedy gods, if pleased by my humors, would provide me with a lifetime's worth of sexual escapades, usually reserved only for emperors and dictators. That my dick, if the humans laughed, would never go unfucked. I have since realized that there is as much truth in this delusion as there are cows living underwater. This realization, however, was not to come until much, much later, and as I said, we are in 1998 when I held that delusion soundly to my bosom, knowing that soon enough, the Tang Storm would commence. When I was not toiling at a restaurant, I toiled at the embarrassing yet joyous work of a comedian's early years. The open mics, the public shamings, the occasional elation of a successful set. Then one fine day I received a call from a friend asking me if it would suit my fancy to open for Jonathan Richman, who you may know as the guy who sings and plays guitar throughout the film Something About Mary and sings often of dancing in lesbian bars. My friend said he enjoys having weird acts open up for him and in the past, and he's had jugglers and mimes and shit of that sort. So I took the accusation of being weird on the chin. At the time, I think I thought weird meant awesome. Yet another delusion was to be shattered by the passing of that old whore time. Weird means weird, and that is fucking that. But the man I would open for embraced the weird, and running this information through my extremely twisted logic machine, I came to the conclusion that this show must be the show where I am inducted into the deeply depraved secret sexual world of the performer. My mental erection was strong as I went to work trying to perfect my set. I could have worked on that set in perpetuity, as when it occurred, it was a motherfucking disaster. The fans of Jonathan Richman did not enjoy the words that erupted from my mouth. It was as if they had convened before the show and decided in a fair and democratic manner that I was to be deeply shamed for keeping them from their hero. The 20 minutes stretched for hours in my mind as I looked out and saw all of my friends and family looking at me as if I were walking to the guillotine. Now, when you bomb, when you really bomb, it is not always the actual set that stands out as the most awful part. To me, it is often, after bombing, the attempts of compatriots to try and convince you that you were not that awful. As they consoled me with beverages and kindness, I began to become drunken. Once drunken, it hit me that I would not only not procure a lady that evening, but that ladies were giving me looks that are generally reserved for legless dogs. I took the train home with my head hung very low. As I walked from the train, disappointed, tangless, and grumpier than Stalin, my drunken mind came up with a brilliant way to turn it all around. I would take the $50 I had earned from my public shaming and treat myself to some pornography. Some historical background on the dark ages of pornography. Though it is hard to believe, this was a time when pornography was a physical thing and only accessible through pornographic purveyors who ran what were then called porno shops. And so at 3 a.m. I jumped into my brother's Chrysler LeBaron and took off towards Wells Street, which housed the only porno shop I knew of. 30 minutes later, I arrived at the store in question and dodgily perused the aisles amongst the drug-addled and the transsexuals and the drug-addled transsexuals. It was then, when I turned down that last aisle, that I saw her, and she me, and a loud hosanna rang from the heavens, fortifying what we both knew to be fate. Being as drunk as a sailor on shore leave, I tried to straighten my gait as I approached her, for as we all know, drunkenness and seduction are terrible bedfellows. As I looked deep into her clear blue eyes, I knew that we would soon consummate our passions, so I picked her up, took her to the counter, and paid $35.95 for the inflatable love doll that I decided was named Lorraine. I could barely contain myself upon exiting the shop. I felt like a gallant knight who had just rescued a distressed damsel. I had single-handedly saved Lorraine from a depraved life of prostitution. Imagine if I had not gotten there in time and another secured her charms. This thought alone only caused my passions for her to swell to an even greater degree. Within seconds of entering the car, I had my lips to her nozzle, blowing hard. With each booze-ridden breath, she became more real until she was complete. My self-control was at an end, and though it sounds tacky, we fucked for the very first time right there in that car. Her squeaking with pleasure with each of my impassioned thrusts. Upon completion, we had collapsed into each other's arms, and I realized that if a cop saw this, he wouldn't even bother arresting me and just shoot me right in the fucking face. I started the car and returned to my father's apartment, deflating my new lover so neighbors would not become suspicious. I went to my room and blew her up again. And that night, she slept soundly in my arms as I drifted off into my super drunk slumber. I dreamt we ran away and started a new life on some faraway island, and we were happy for a time. The next thing I know, I am jarred awake by the door to my room being opened. My dad had walked into the room, but upon seeing me sleeping with the fucking blow-up doll, he slammed the door quickly and left the apartment. My horror was not only immense, but obese. He would never understand the love that Lorraine and I shared that evening. So I deflated Lorraine and took her to a dumpster behind a Walgreens. Due to my intense panic and absurd hangover, I said my goodbyes in a rushed manner. There was nothing I could say to make it easier. As quickly as it had begun, our forbidden love had to end. My father never brought up catching me in bed with Lorraine, though I feel this subject may just be too much for him to comprehend. Someday I will tell him the whole story of our brief affair, but for now it is best that we keep this buried in a podcast. As for Lorraine, I never saw her again. Whenever I go home for the holidays, I walk by that dumpster behind that Walgreens and think of our brief yet happy time together. And I am filled with gratitude towards her for our wild and foolhardy escapade. But there is one more party to which I am eternally grateful, and that is alcohol. For without alcohol, I would have never experienced that brief yet glorious affair with sweet and beautiful Lorraine.
It's like I scored a fucking goal. Telemundo.
That is. So now Dad maybe will know. Probably not.
Oh, yeah. No, no. I mean, this is an obscure fucking podcast. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
He's not a listener.
Yeah.
That's so fucking
Is this on like on Fox News really late
this
at night?
This is, this is at Fox Business.
At like 3 in the morning.
It's right after
it switches
Red
over.
Eye. Yeah.
It's on, the story will be on the ticker. Just, at the bottom.
It's like, wait a second, this is pretty intriguing.
Mike O'Connell leaves Lorraine behind Walgreens, jizz filled.
Shadows.
Ah, that's so amazing.
So thank you for letting. I mean, it was really long. It was.
It's
like
great though.
No, it's amazing.
Some Orson Welles bullshit.
That's why I don't know. There's something about being when somebody is smart. Like Hunter S. Thompson was smart about being so reckless.
Right, right.
So it's like there's something about being like really, really smart about buying a fucking blow-up doll and fucking it.
Well, you have to survive it.
Yeah.
And then it's easy to talk about.
I remember one time my dad came all over my mom and I.
Do you have any Johnny Carson music? Doc Severton, hit that fucking cue.
Anyway,
we are in Burbank.
My dad went out to dinner and he gave me $100 and I got like drunk at dinner. And then so I drunkenly drove to a porn store and spent $70 of it. And like I needed money.
See?
Like,
no, I mean, sometimes fake tang is worth it.
Yeah.
You will spend your. Oh! No. Didn't even know. It wasn't a joke.
That's real.
That was straight up truth.
Vicky, thoughts?
That is, oh my God. Well, it's funny to me that like that's a common occurrence. Well, I guess before the internet was so
prevalent, now, like,
where it's everywhere.
It's like, I want to go get a Cherry magazine and a fake lady. Yeah. I hope the L's running. I want a fake lady and some fucking mags.
I've only been to I've been to porn stores maybe a handful of times in my life, but it was usually like with some like with a guy like my
oh,
husband
yeah.
Well,
at
or
least,
boyfriend.
At least
before.
You have somebody to kind of like giggle with,
right?
Yeah.
Like,
but if you're alone, it's such a dire.
There's
affair.
Not
a,
if you're alone and you hear a giggle, you're like, what?
What?
Just living a lie.
My friend used to, he lived by this video store and they had a porno section and he was really late returning this porno because I think he became fiercely addicted to it or something. And so he's returning it and he's like, yeah, I had this for like 5 days. He's talking to the employee and this little boy comes up who's like waiting to see what movies are being returned.
Yeah, he's like,
so he goes,
here?
Hey, what do you got? And he's like, okay, thanks, kid. Just kind of give me a second here. And he's like, so what do you got? And he keeps asking what he got. He goes, it is fucking private. And I was like, well, it's obviously a porn. It's not a documentary.
It's
about,
better to
like,
show him the porn.
No, I know. It's a porno.
It's fucking private.
Anyways,
well, God. that's those are sad times.
Yeah.
Those are sadder times.
I know, no. And now you can just be a total fucking creep in your bedroom without ever having to go interact with
you
anybody.
You do forget that, though. Like, I mean, remember when you used to go to fucking hotels and you used to just, like, you know, you would spend, like, $20 on a fuck, like, porn, you know? So you'd be like, all right, $20 on porn. You would have to sit there and just, like, you're just watching credits. You're watching setup. Like, maybe the first scene is not a scene where you want to, like, see these people fuck. You
well,
know,
you
maybe
know what porn shops were
down.
Good for back in the day? The only outlet to purchase Whippets.
Really?
No, you could go to I used to go to Crate and Barrel, and you just have to say you're having a whipped cream party.
I always enjoyed the fact that there were Whippets available at the porno shop. I'm just saying. I mean,
you're wrong.
No, there's a more rational way to get them. Sure, yeah. You have to pretend you're having a whipped cream party.
Yeah,
like that's a fucking thing.
Me and some of my closest guy friends are coming over. This, sir, you're 16. I have idea. I'd like the 40 cartridges, yeah. Please.
I've never done Whippets. Is that crazy?
You haven't. Girl. You haven't lived.
Did I miss out?
It's a bad day to start. It's a bad time to start.
Yeah, you don't want to start anymore.
It's like the dumbest drug to do. So
it would be right now.
It's
if
a great
I was
thing
like,
to do when you're young. When you're like, I am so irresponsible with my mind.
Right.
Right now, if you were to do Whippets, it's the equivalent of like somebody our age being like, I think I'm going to learn how to play guitar and start to do like a heavy metal show. And be like, dude,
it's a little late.
You have it's over. Don't throw it all away. Whatever it is. So what is your favorite thing to do, Michael O'Connell? Like, as far as all the things, because I know you do have you have a lot of songs. Like, you've been on Kimmel, you played a lot of songs. You do, when you do live stand-up, you play a lot of like musical songs about heavy metal songs for children, to educate the children.
Yes, no, I'm all about the babies.
You do other songs about babies, but you do also have this like amazing ability to write sad songs and play sad songs, and you just did an album of your sad songs.
Yeah, it'll
called
be out.
And, Sad Songs.
Sad Songs to Get Sad To.
Sad Songs to Get Sad To.
That'll be out on iTunes in December.
Yes, and you've been working on that for a while. But what is right now your favorite thing that you're doing?
I enjoy doing the sad songs in comedy venues because they get fucking huge laughs.
That's true, though, right?
People really can't. If people can't take it seriously, or they think I'm joking, and they're laughing at my heartbreak, which is actually a little more intriguing to me than someone just laughing at something I thought was funny.
Yeah.
If you're laughing at my pain, wow, that's fucked up, and it says a lot about you, don't it?
Yeah. So now like, are you kind of at the point where that's one of the things you want to focus on more and more?
I do. I mean, for my whole life, I've just loved sad songs, and I've always kind of like get so involved in these sad songs.
Because
a passion of mine, and I enjoy kind of like the way they take you to this weird sad place that's not real, you know? So I've always thought about that and always thought, man, if I could do that, that would be super tits.
And then in like some of the comedy songs, like What's It Gonna Be or like Asian Baby, for instance, you speak faster, you rhyme pretty fast, you're pretty much like rapping
in
a lot of stuff. How do you have that ability? Because it is very good. Do you listen to a lot of hip-hop, or you just kind
I've always thought hip-hop was a very amazing form, and it's like, it's basically like a rhyming baby. A little kid is like, it's basically a child's game, you know, like it's just fun to play with words. And that's like, that's why it's so funny that rap became so fucking hard, because it's just like Mad Libs.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Oh, yeah. I like how you did your Mad Libs. It's real cute. How you put hookers and fucking and blow and like, you know, fucking Benjamins in your Mad Libs.
And things that rhyme with those things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So it's I always thought it was such a, It's rife with humor and humanity.
And you say babies a lot.
I adore babies. They're the only thing that's real.
You like babies are what get you through the dark times.
Oh, absolutely. I enjoy smiling at babies.
What is your favorite kind of baby?
Oh, I mean, I do think Asian babies are the cutest, but that, I mean, if you want like a whole rundown, it's Asian, black, Serbian, and then
Serbian coming in hot number three. Huh?
Nothing is real. Nothing is real.
You do put Asians number one though. Your favorite
baby.
I've
always thought that they were cutest, and their parents always responded so poorly when I would try and like interact with their babies. Yeah. So I have this kind of love hate thing going on.
Yeah,
love your baby, hate you, parents.
And then you should
stop thinking that I'm going to corrupt your baby. I'm only going to see it for 30 seconds.
You should definitely Google. What is the actual title of your Asian Baby song?
Asian Baby.
Asian Babies. Michael O'Connell, Asian Babies. Michael O'Connell, What's It Gonna Be? What is your Twitter again, Michael O'Connell?
M.A. O'Connell.
M.A. O'Connell. So you were right. I thought it was different.
Yes.
I'm a fucking idiot.
No, don't beat yourself up, dog.
Mike, do you want to play a sad song? Do you want to play a funny song?
I mean,
what do you want to do?
I can play a sad song. I mean, I don't know if it's good to... It's maybe do something a little. Yeah, I mean, I'll play a sad song.
You want to do?
Yeah.
Well, what do you want to do? Do you want
to
maybe
play
something?
I would love.
Why don't you play
a sad song?
Maybe you could play a lighter one, and maybe we'll do another sad one at some point.
Okay,
we'll
let's do that.
So we'll get set up again. Mike O'Connell's album. Sad songs to get sad too.
This 2 hours, by the way, we're just running the gamut of emotions,
yes,
aren't we?
We're going up and down. Well, the thing about this, right? The thing about Mike is that it's true that I've seen him play his sad songs. They're very sad and great, and there's great depth to them. But I think that if you saw this in a comedy club, you would almost be so oddly wired that you'd maybe be like, he's just brilliantly funny.
And it's like, well, you never know.
He's pained.
And who cares what they're thinking anyway,
right? Yeah, fuck it. We were doing a show a couple weeks ago, and he was just like, you know, it doesn't matter what you say. Like during,
I was trying to blow minds.
Like just
and,
to himself.
There were no minds to blow.
Like, doesn't matter what you say, which I thought was good shit.
That's
anyway,
hilarious.
This is Mike O'Connell. What's the song you're gonna play us, Mike?
This is a song called "On Some Other World." It's about when you are deeply in love with someone and they don't give a fuck.
Cunts.
And so you realize that perhaps on some other world you could be some item.
Please.
All right. On some other world, I'm the king and you're the queen. And we let the people rule themselves and just write each other poetry. On some other world, they keep us at the zoo to let the people watch and wonder how love grew so true. I wish I lived on any world other than this one. On this one, I don't have you. On some other world, there's a bed of silk and fleece, and it's our job to make love on it, to provide that world with energy. On some other world, the only time we get upset is when we think about some other world where we never met. I wish I lived on any world other than this one. On this one, I can't have you. On this world, we both admit it's not to be, but on some other world, you sleep so soundly in my arms.
Sapphire, you like that one? Did that hit you?
Yeah.
I'll be right back, guys.
It's very naughty.
It is very naughty.
That's another one. That's another thing that I was thinking. I was like, this is very anachronistic for me to do these songs on a naughty show. But
that's very naughty.
What better way to get a lady in bed is to pretend that you're really deeply emotional?
I guess that is a pretty good question, though. What do you think is the biggest stage aphrodisiac? Is it when you're playing musical comedy songs? Is it when you're doing crazy stand-up? Or is it when you're kind of opening your heart and pouring it out, sort of like on Sad Songs to Get Sad to? What do you think?
I would say when I was like doing some bombastic big thing, that scares people. That really, because people don't have the capacity to separate like offstage guy from stage guy. So
yeah,
it's like,
so like if you're a quiet, peaceful guy off stage,
yeah, like, and he's just like, oh, this is where I like go crazy, and you're lucky I don't do it in the town square.
Yeah,
so that would be all kinds of fucked up.
So it's not that one.
Yeah, no, and I've had so many women just come up to me afterwards, like, are you okay? you know, like after the show, like, do I need to like check you into a mental facility?
Yeah.
Oh, you're so sweet. You want to save me?
What doesn't it work
like,
for?
That is the sound of my boner falling. As the lady thinks I'm just bipolar.
So what about when, because a lot of like kind of your funnier songs, I think, are maybe they're not as, yeah, you're not,
I think,
as
the music,
crazy.
I don't know, what we have a lady right here. What is what do you think? Does comedic styling, do those comedic stylings turn you on more than musical shadows?
I got to say, I would really want to approach you after the story. Like, if
story,
I saw
yeah.
you read that story, like, to me, that's just so, it's funny, but it's not just funny. It's beautifully written. You take me somewhere else. You know, I might be a little intimidated to approach the sad song guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You'd feel more comfortable approaching the guy whose father walked in on him banging Lorraine to blow up doll.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's all preference, and we live in a subjective world, and you're allowed that.
And if it depends too what you're after. If I just want to score with this guy on the stage,
if you want to get laid, you're going to Lorraine's
and
lover.
It's like, hey, he's probably clean. He only fucks rubber dolls,
right? And at least I
he
know it's
wears
like
a rubber.
I got to be better than a rubber doll, right?
I can move only a little.
But
and
this
it will
song,
be more...
this guy might want a relationship.
Yeah.
Well, that song's about Lorraine.
Yeah. Well, the whole album is about how Lorraine broke my shallow heart
behind the Walgreens. So I think I think one of the things that we're similar in is that you've had to almost adapt to the idea that you have to keep doing your own thing in order to get anywhere,
yes,
in Los Angeles. Because I think a lot of times people just do one thing, like they'll be a comedian or they'll be an actor or whatever the fuck it is. But if you're out there trying to make money for years and you have to go through sort of some of the bullshit, that almost makes you really versatile. So you've been in a lot of movies, mm-hmm, right?
Right, as I'm about to become successful in one thing, I leave it,
yes,
immediately. And I start a new
because there was
thing.
A while, there was a while, like, I mean, like, where you were doing a lot of stand-up, you were getting up a lot, and that was really kind of what was your thing, right?
Yeah. No, I like to switch it up because I think that, everyone thinks comedians are just funny, or, you know, I think that, like, a person is so many things.
Yeah.
I just think you're limiting yourself if you're not investigating.
Now, that has to be the thing that's getting him laid the most, right? Out of all
if you're not investigating that's different parts of your personality, which sometimes is sadness and sometimes is overwhelming joy.
And you've also written and directed your own feature before.
I did not direct it.
I wrote it and starred in it.
Yeah, and did the music
which is
for
called
it.
The Living Wake, and did the music for it.
Yes, it is absurd.
And then what other movie? You were in Funny People, right?
I was in Funny People. I was in Born to be a Star. I was in
that's the Bucky Larson
story. I was in
Black
Dahlia. That was my first movie.
Black Dahlia?
Oh, that's awesome.
What were you in that?
I played the woman that was cut in half.
No, I
just played some.
You were brilliant.
I know. I really worked hard on that shit. I had three acting coaches for that. I was a sailor during the Zoot Suit Riots. I had two lines, but it was with fucking De Palma. So suck a dick.
I don't know why it's directed at me.
De Palma. I don't know what you. I don't. I mean, I'm sure you worked with a couple of the lower end directors, but this is De Palma.
I've worked. I was on The Real Wedding Crashers. Yeah.
Directed by a man that lives under a bridge.
Oh fuck. That happened. Shadows. Actually, I was just in Foxwoods last weekend with Steve Byrne, who
Don't
I did
brag,
the real
dog.
Wedding Crashers with, and it's very familiar when you spend more than like a night or two in a casino hanging out. When you're there to work or whatever the fuck stand-up is, when you're there to do that, and you are in a fucking, you really, really grow to just be like, get me the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
My mom was like, what was the weather like? I was like, I haven't been outside in over 3 days.
Yeah.
And I don't plan on it.
The casino is 4 square miles.
I was like, they have everything.
There's no need to leave.
I was like, I don't need to go outside. They have this whole section where they painted a sky, so it's like I'm outside.
And
it's
they
the
even have
thing.
They have REO Speedwagon in this casino as well. Why would you?
Yeah.
They're playing.
And
right
they really
down
do.
The,
I mean,
right
it always shocks you when you're like, really? What the fuck? You're like, the B-52s. You're like, God, is that sad or is this place great?
Is
where
that,
am I?
Is that good for me or bad for them?
Who's doing good here? Me? I'm doing bad. We're all doing bad. Okay, we're all doing bad. Okay, good to know that we're all doing bad.
I just wanted to clear that up.
But what, like, so what would be your dream job, Mike? If you could do anything, what would you do?
I would want to be left alone to do whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Just like, because I think you do, as I was saying, you just kind of, wherever your mind takes you, and I think that's the beauty of being a creative person. You know?
Do you think you have your dream job right now?
Oh, I definitely do, yes. Even when I have no money or something, you can always reflect on how it's like you kind of mildly beat the system just by even sticking in it.
Right. It is true. Yeah. If you have that perspective, but you go through those periods where you're just like, what the fuck? And you just have to like wait it out, but it is the fucking worst.
So everyone does feel like that.
Yeah.
Ugh. Okay.
Yeah. When I think that's a human.
Man, I remember when I used to live on microwavable pizzas. And it really was like almost like crying was like a side effect of it.
Cause you're just I think right when you're going through the beginning of the bad time, you're like, oh, I feel so bad for myself. And then if you have the strength to start laughing at yourself.
Well, then you almost get resourceful.
Oh, you're like, man, I'm fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, you're like, that's like, sad. You're like, I know where a new Vons is opening up and I could get some samples.
Yeah. And I always like to think like, hey, man, some rich guy just got his Bentley taken away.
That must be crazy for him.
Yeah, it's like, I don't even have Bentley problems. I have no Bentley to have Bentley problems with.
Well, I think we should do probably another song, Michael.
Okay, dog.
Do you want to do a sad song, or would you play Asian Babies at some point?
Yeah, sure, I can do that.
I think this is...
That's a little more uplifting.
This is a little more uplifting, and this is a song that is basically about your love of the babies we spoke of, the Asians, the Asian one.
And it's not in some dark way, I just find them to be adorable members of humanity.
You don't want to hurt them.
Oh, aww. That was the cutest one. Even though I know that was a white baby's cry. I mean, sorry, I'm pretty good at this. I've been doing this a while. It ain't my first baby rodeo.
Which, by the way, baby rodeo is just made illegal. I don't know if you guys read about that. I think that's bullshit.
Only in Louisiana can you go to a baby rodeo, maybe.
Jesus Christ, she didn't last 8 seconds at all. Yeah, she's 9 months.
The idea of a baby riding a calf is pretty fucking tits cute.
I think, I'll tell you what.
Aww, as a little cowboy.
Yeah, the little clown.
And then the grown man who's about to open the trap just gives it real life directions like, hold on tight, don't worry about it. Work your legs. It's like an 8-month-old like, ah!
Yeah, well,
it's thrust
you know
up.
What? We shouldn't. We should try to get some investors for this baby rodeo.
I already found a bunch of guys. They're hitting me up on Twitter.
Let's do it then.
Let's
Asian
party.
Babies, Waba. This is a song about how I think that Asian babies are adorable, maybe. Chord change. Here comes a chord change. Watch out. Oh, shit. I want an Asian baby from Korea or Japan, Vietnam, it doesn't matter, I just want it in my hands. But no one will let me play with their Asian baby. Maybe it's my dodgy past, maybe it's the way I dress, but every time I approach, the parents get so upset, and they want to let me play with their baby. Do I have to steal one? Yep. Well, they seem to be always smiling, and their skin, it seems so soft. Wanna look into their eyes and get back all the hope I lost. But no one will let me play with their Asian baby. Tell me this, why won't you let me play with your Asian baby? Why don't you let me play with your Asian baby? Soft little Asian baby, I want to play with your baby. I think you have a special baby. I think you have a special baby. Wait, one more thing before I stop the song, maybe. I deserve an Asian baby from Korea or Japan. I swear I've been a good boy. Just put it in my hands, but no one will let me play with their Asian baby, baby, baby. Shangarangananda Asian baby, baby, baby. Shangandaranka Asian baby, baby, baby. Shangandaranka Asian baby, 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 baby. Again.
It's a real, crowd pleaser. And a cloud pleaser.
For a building in a corporate park.
For a Tuesday night building in a corporate park.
You can fucking jam into people.
They're pretty good. You ain't wrong, Doug. You ain't wrong. You ain't wrong.
That was fantastic. And I had to back away from the mic because I didn't want to laugh and ruin the quality recording there.
It is so good when you do this song live. Like, I think it's when you decide... You deserve an Asian baby. No,
that's when people are finally sign up.
People are like,
they're like, he kind of does. He's really upset.
At this point, he does deserve an Asian baby.
Yeah, I've had some incidents with that at all Asian shows. We have a lot of Asian comic friends that
true,
we do
we
shows
do.
With.
Yeah, and we both.
I had to have security kick a guy out for threatening, calling me racist.
Really?
And screaming at me from the audience, heckling me, and it was like, well, you know what? You have no sense of humor.
And maybe don't understand racism. Right?
Oh, no, that's the most... Oh, and the best one ever was after that video came out on Funny or Die on HBO, I got an email from this guy who... And it said ESPN3. That's where he worked. I don't know his name. I don't remember it. But
nobody knows,
like,
anyone's name
on
ESPN3.
You know what? I am an adoptive father of an Asian child, and what you did in that song is absolutely, like, despicable, and you should be ashamed of yourself. Some people can't have kids, and they need... And I was like, whoa, you're just totally... You put your own situation on my song?
Yeah.
So you can go suck all the dicks.
Yeah. And he's...
The crowd does not like him.
This crowd is on my side.
Steve Wilkos on the side, ready to go.
That guy wanted an Asian baby also and got one.
No, he got one, and then, like, here I am, Asian baby left.
Yeah, and he's treating you like an asshole?
I'm the asshole.
Yeah, no way. Sorry, guy who got kicked out of that thing. Fuck you.
Sorry, guy that just got demoted from ESPN2 to 3 to the pool fucking tournaments.
Yeah, by the way.
Did you just write back?
Shut your mouth before I shut it for you.
Ah, yeah.
Did you write back, like, so can I not have your baby?
I felt so bad because it's like, when you're doing this shit, you're not doing it for your sanity or your health. You know, you actually want somebody to enjoy it. And
right.
And it's like, it should be a lovely thing. And when you get something back saying you're a menace to society, it's like, check, please, right, motherfucker. It's so embarrassing. And you're just like, well, what am I doing? You know, I thought I was having fun. But everyone else is taking this seriously when it's so obvious that this is, like, just really how I feel.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know if it's racist, if it's
not
something positive.
It's not. Yeah, it's like, it really is not. I mean, I could understand how you could say that race is involved in that.
Yeah.
But racism is being like, you can't do that because fuck him, fuck those people.
Yeah.
And if you're like,
if you have
more
a preference.
Of them, more of them, more of that race.
Yeah.
That's racist. Yeah, I call that racism, which, like, is preferential race.
Uh-huh.
It's different.
Which is just as bad.
Which is how the Holocaust started. Anyways, I think I've disproven myself. Real quick, we'll have one more song, but I want to... You did Jimmy Kimmel back in the fucking day.
Oh, back in the day, it was live. It was
live.
It was the early 2000s.
He wasn't even wearing a suit, right?
No,
he was still pretty cash.
He was just wearing, he was wearing just pants.
And he is, with limit, because the Windy Weekend was here, he is really legitimately, like, the best fucking dude.
Yeah,
but you,
sweet man.
You went on there and probably went through... I guess what would be anyone's sort of, like, mini nightmare while going out there.
Oh, no, not mini. No, major. Nothing small about the nightmare, dog.
So what exactly happened? So, I mean, obviously, like, you get that gig, you're kind of like, this is pretty fucking cool,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's always, like, for even though things have changed so much in comedy,
yeah,
like, we were still residually dealing with, like, oh, in the 80s, if you got on Johnny Carson. Yeah. Like, that was always the story. Right. So you think, oh, my God, my first TV appearance is biggest deal ever. So you're freaked out and you're like, thank God they have a bar backstage.
Yeah.
And so I brought my amp and I, like, they even picked me up in a car, which I was like, well, well, don't have to take the bus today. And then I actually, like, gave the guy my bus pass, and he's like, we don't need that, sir.
You're like, no, I know how this works.
Okay, I don't think I have not been on a public bus.
I know
that
how
is
the
a
Oscars
smaller
works.
Version of a public bus, but it's a more private even.
Sir,
but,
get yeah, out.
So, I went over, and I set up everything, and we checked out the amp and the mic, and I did a run-through, did two run-throughs.
You're basically starting with, like, kind of, like, high-energy, like, rock music. Like, yeah, that's how you're going to start your set.
So I go up, and I have my guitar on, and I'm like, are you ready to rock this motherfucker? Whatever the hell I said.
Yeah.
And then and they're like, yeah, I am! And I'm like, I am slaying!
Yeah.
And then I just go and hit the guitar, and nothing comes out. And it's just like the amp wasn't working, so I'm just like, well... Demons.
No.
Shadows.
What you actually did, I think what's amazing.
This is really awkward. Or something.
No, I don't even think you do. I think, you don't know. I really don't think that you think the first time you watch it that your amp fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
You think you're doing a bit because you don't freak out as much as I think most people
would. I
think I
said, isn't this just like life?
Yeah, you say something.
that was real.
Or like, don't you love in life how things go wrong or something
and
like that?
Everyone's like, yes, we do.
Yeah.
And then a little man ran out.
Then a little man comes over.
And then they gave me and they put me on like 3 months later because they felt they fucked up. But then I came to find, I think, that my amp was fucked up. So it was actually my fault. Yeah.
Did it have? It didn't happen again.
Best mistake ever. No. They wouldn't let me bring an amp anymore. Yeah. And they also would not let me ever take off my guitar because they're like, dude,
it's set.
It's like, you will not. They didn't
You're not getting a third appearance out of this shit, O'Connell.
So then I did it a couple more times based on merit. But
was that because I think even like that set goes well.
Yeah, no.
It's just
it
kind of has a
technical
fuck up.
I think it did have the element of like it was a bit of a comeback. So I think that's what always. Impresses
but
we're
well, after that show what I mean I would imagine if that was me I would
surprise it and just go throw up. I was like I think it was you're too like jazzed to even think about what the fuck's going on, so it's like well nobody is scowling at me, everyone's like, but again it was like in the story where people are kind of being like, some people are giving you pity and you're like, what? Why everyone was laughing? Why is everyone giving me all
no,
this
no,
pity?
No, everyone was laughing.
No, I know. And then
wait.
Which
what
is
the fuck?
It is the most confusing thing for a comic because you're like, okay, I gauged that I got these laughs. But then somebody else is like, well, that audience just was not that pleasant.
That is true.
Like, oh, come on.
I was just starting to think I did good.
Yeah, no,
oh,
exactly.
Boy. Oh, nobody's killing out there tonight. Right. I just fucking went. Felt like
I
killed.
Oh, I feels like. Oh, did you miss me? No, you especially.
No, actually, you're the only one I got the whole set. Boy, I don't know what their deal is. They're terrible.
It absolutely is true about comedy.
So yeah, there is. You are really set. That's why it's great when you have like people whose opinions you actually trust. Like anytime my brother comes to something, I know that if my brother will tell me if it sucks.
Yeah.
And it is nice sometimes when you know something sucks.
Yeah.
To actually have someone
Henry
tell
Phillips
you it sucks.
Has the best the thing to say to a comedian right after a set is you walk up to him really cheery and you pat him on the back and go, "Hey man, that was a great speech." And then oh my God. So it was just like some sort of like debate class fucking situation. No laughs.
That is.
Are you in the forensics team? Oh, yeah. Nice speech.
That is pretty good. Well, let's get to business and we'll have Mike play us out with a song, Vicky.
Yeah.
So is there anything to say?
Yeah, just one quick one. All Things Comedy is having a show at Largo on November 20th. This time around, it's Will Anderson, Bill Burr, Tom Segura, Ryan Sickler, and host Dave Anthony. So if you're in LA, go out to Largo on the 20th. And support All Things Comedy.
Dave Anthony. Also, Illuminati, you know we appreciate the hell out of it. 1052 of the pace. Go to iTunes, listen to the podcast, rate the podcast, give it 5 stars. You give it 5 stars enough, Illuminati, what you're going to get is you're going to get a postcard. What's so meaningful about that postcard? It's going to have 3 signatures on it. Do you care whose? Well, that's good because we're not getting into specifics. With that being said, Mike, your Twitter is at Mao O'Connell, or at Ma O'Connell. That's M-A-O-C-O-N-N-E-L-L.
Yeah.
At Ma O'Connell. What is it? Ma O'Connell?
It's Michael Alexander O'Connell, dog. There's just like, it's slightly abbreviated.
M-A O'Connell. I thought that was pretty clear.
Yeah. It sounds like you're calling yourself Mao.
Ma O'Connell.
Oh, you know me.
Ma O'Connell.
Since the late 80s.
The Asian baby thing. That makes sense now. All right, so what are you going to play us out with, Mike? Is there anything else you want to plug? Are there any shows?
No, I mean, no, not really.
Oh, sorry to make
I'm headlining the Improv next Friday at 10 o'clock.
All right.
If you want to come out and see me.
They do.
Depress you.
Well, who doesn't want that?
Or make you levitous.
Yeah.
This is a song that is, this is a song that is a sad song, but it's actually, if you are very sad for a long time, at a certain point you reach your nadir and you have to, you have no choice but to become happy. And this is a song about being positive and, looking on the bright side of the shadow. Woke up on a cloudy day to find my plans had been mislaid, to find all I thought untrue. I saw no point in keeping on, as all I gathered it had gone, and that included you. But I've learned you gotta make your own rainbow, 'cause it's never gonna rain when you want it to. And the refraction of the sun cannot be counted on. The rainbows are mostly up to you. Life sure has a funny way of twisting up a path that's straight, of getting you high before you fall. It lets you think that you figured it out, and just when you've released your doubt, it reminds you that you're small. That's why you gotta keep making your own rainbow, 'cause it's never gonna rain when you want it to. And the refraction of the sun cannot always be counted on. The rainbows are mostly up to you. Find yourself on a cloudy day and all the hope seems so far away, just put a rainbow in your smile and just keep on making your own rainbows, 'cause it's never gonna rain quite when you want it to. And the refraction of the sun cannot always be counted on. The rainbows are always up to you. The rainbows are always up to you.
Mike,
thank you.
O'Connell, Illuminati. Thank
at
you.
M.A. O'Connell.
Thank you, Sapphire. Thank you, Dragonfly.
Thank you for having me.
That was amazing. Mike O'Connell, amazingly versatile, amazingly awesome. Thank you for coming on. Goodbye, Illuminati!